Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion at the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is June 3, 2014. Our decision 6, 2018, we're going to start our first service today with a song entitled, I Come to the Garden Alone.
While the deer is still on the road. I come to the garden alone, while the deer is still on the roadside, and the voice I hear calling on my ear, the sound of Yah is closer, when He walks with me and He talks with me, and He tells me I am His own. The joy we share as we tarry there, and how good is the good. He speaks in the sound of His voice, it's so sweet the birds have to sing, and the melody that He gave to me, within my heart is living, and He walks with me, and He talks with me, and He tells me I am His own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. I stay in the garden with Him, for the night around me be falling, but He bids me go through the voice of woe, the voice to me is calling. And He walks with me and He talks with me, and He tells me I am His own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other had ever known.
Part 2, Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, we're going to continue with our study now with the title of The Prophecy of Daniel and the Revelation of John Contain the World's History. Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein, for the time is at hand. Revelation 1:3. Let none think, because he cannot expound the meaning of every symbol in the revelation, that it is useless for them to search this book in an effort to show the meaning of the truth it contains. The one who revealed these mysteries unto John will give the diligent searcher for the truth a foretaste of the heavenly things. Those whose hearts are open to the reception of the truth will be enabled to understand His teachings and will be granted a blessing promised unto those who hear the words of this prophecy and keep those things which are written therein. That's taken from the Acts of the Apostles, page 584, that quote. In the Revelation, all the books of the Bible meet an end. Here is a complement of the book of the Daniel. One is a prophecy, the other a revelation. The book that was sealed is not the revelation, but that portion of the prophecy of the Daniel relating unto the last days. The angel commanded Bethel, O Daniel, shut up the words, and seal the book even unto the time of the end. Page 585. The number 7 indicates completeness, while the symbols used reveal the condition of the church at the different periods in the history of the world. Finite men should be aware of seeking to control their fellow men, taking the place assigned to the Holy Spirit. Let not men feel that it is their prerogative to give to the world what they suppose to be the truth, and refuse that anything should be given contrary unto their ideas. This is not their work. Many things will appear distinctly as the truth, which will not be acceptable unto those who think their own interpretation of the Scriptures always right. Most decided changes will have to be made in regard to idea which some have accepted as without a flaw. Testimonies, Ministers, page 76. A large portion of the Christendom agree that we are living in the last days of this world's history. When Yahshua was asked by his disciples for the signs of his return onto the earth again and of the end of the world, one of the many signs he gave was, when you therefore shall see the abomination of the desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whoso readeth let him understand. Matthew 24:15. It is evident from the words of the Master that the book of the Daniel contains information regarding the signs of the times and of the end of the world. For the prophecies of Daniel were of little worth unto the disciples and the early Christian church, for the Daniel says the book was sealed unto the time of the end, Daniel 12:4. And since the book is now open, it is evident that we are living in the time of the end, Revelation 22:6-10. But the book was to be open to one class of the people and shut unto another. For he added, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Daniel 12:10. Therefore it is important that we should be free from all wickedness and obedient unto the divine requirements, if we would understand and receive the blessings contained in the book. For the intention of this publication is not to explain the symbol which have heretofore been fully explained in the various publications and proved to be correct in the general outline up to the present. But our intention is to clear certain features which have been hidden by the spirit of Elohim for a time. For the outstanding symbols which are so familiar to the Bible student will be briefly visualized, sufficient only to connect the thought with the symbols that are to be explained. We shall endeavor to prove that the symbols of the book of the Daniel and Revelation contain the entire world's history, both civil and religious, from creation to redemption. The second chapter of Daniel, beginning with the first universal kingdom, Babylon, after the flood, we have the world's history from thence unto the second coming of the Yahshua, or unto the end of the present world, represented in one great metallic image. Thou, O King, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, and his thighs of the brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till the stone was cut out without the hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of the iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. And in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people. But it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that that stone was cut out of the mountain without the hands, and let it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great Elohim hath made known unto the king which shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel 2:31, 34, 44, and 45. For the gold, silver, brass, and iron have been interpreted to represent Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome. For the mixture of the iron and clay, the feet and the toes, the present kingdoms succeeding the fall of Rome, wonderful prophecy it is, so simple and so true, that this great image only reveals the framework, as it were, of our world's history. In the seventh chapter of Daniel, we have the same chronological arrangement and the symbols of the various beasts. The reason for the duplication is for the revealing and the detail of the historical events which were to transpire within the framework of the great image. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by the night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea, and four beasts that came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made to stand up on the feet as a man. And a man's heart was given unto it, and behold, another beast, a second, like unto a bear, and it raised up itself on the one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it, and they said thus unto it, Rise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and the dominion was given unto it. After this I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast dreadful. Dominion was given unto it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth, and it devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue at the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things, Daniel 7:2-8. For the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the nondescript beast depict the same kingdoms as the gold, the silver, brass, and iron. For the unnatural and peculiar symbols connected with the beast, namely the wings, ribs, horns, and heads, are capable of the disclosing of the mysteries of the historical occurrences which were to transpire within the great prophetic periods. The most wonderful thing about these prophetic symbols is that they are perfectly capable of revealing the truth, and once understood aright, they cannot be contradicted. Any interpretation of the symbolical prophecies that do not perfectly fit the explanation given is never to be depended upon, for the interpretation of such symbols must not only be in harmony with the whole tenor of the Elohim's book and law, but it must point out some important lesson of the Elohim's people. And when such an explanation as referred to is derived from the scriptures, then only we have the truth. While the head of the gold on the great image represented the kingdom of Babylon at the height of her glory, the lion covers a greater period according unto Genesis 10:8-10. And Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Yahweh. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Yahweh and the beginning of his kingdom, was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calna in the land of Shinar. The beginning of Nimrod's kingdom was Babel, or as it is in the Greek, Babylon. His dominion extended over the four cities of the plain, namely Babylon, Erech, Arkah, and Kalna. If the reader will turn to Genesis 10:1-8 and carefully count the persons born from the family of Noah after going out from the ark of the deluge to the birth of Nimrod, it will be noticed that Nimrod is the 26th person born after the flood. The location of the city was in the land of Shinar, as in Genesis 11:2. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. For the name Babel, Babylon in Greek, originated at the time that the Tower of Babel was in the building, after which Yahweh confounded the multitude by the diversity of the speech, according unto the Daniel. The capital of the Babylon stood on the plain, on the same plain, and Yahweh gave Jehoiakim, king of the Judah, into his hand, the king of Babylon, that he carried into the land of the Shinar, Daniel 1:2. Therefore, Babylon was founded immediately after the flood, perhaps somewhere between 2400 and 2300 B.C., and had reached her height of the universal empire between 400 or 500 B.C. Babylon, in her development, had consumed a period of about 1800 years or more. Certainly no one would think that the Babylon made a very rapid speed in the conquering of the ancient world. Symbol of the wings and ribs. We may now inquire of the meaning of the wings on the lion and on the leopard. Also, the ribs in the mouth of the bear. For the wings on the lion certainly cannot represent speed, as some have taught. If wings were to represent rapidity, they should have been on the bear. For the Cyrus and Darius conquered old Babylon overnight. Furthermore, if the wings represent speed on the one beast, they must likewise represent the same on the other. Could they represent speed on the four-headed leopard beast? Certainly not. For a careful observation of the symbols show that the leopard beast had nothing to do with the Alexander's conquest of the Medo-Persia. For the leopard represents the kingdom after the conquest was accomplished. For the foreheads are the four Grecian divisions after the death of the Alexandra, namely Cassander, Lamarcus, Ptolemy, and Seleucus. For the conflict and conquest between the Medo-Persia and Grecia is brought unto our attention in the Daniel chapter 8, verse 5-7. And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes, and he came unto the ram which had the two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran into him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with a colder against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he cast him down onto the ground, and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. In the Daniel 8:20-21, Daniel is told by the angel that the he-goat is Grecia, the ram Medo-Persia, and the notable horn between his eyes is the first king. Therefore, Alexander's swift conquest is represented by the he-goat that touched not the ground. If the wings were to represent speed, they should have been on the he-goat and not on the leopard, since the truth of what has been said cannot be denied, and as the thought that has been entertained by some is contradictory unto the symbols, we must look elsewhere for the application of the wings. But we think it is far safer and wiser, as well as more reasonable, for one to admit his mistake, as we mortals are apt to make many of them, as well as rather than to become involved in the contradictory interpretations of the word of the Elohim. First, we must understand that inspiration is recorded by the means of these symbols, the entire world's history. Let's not forget that there was a world before the flood. If one of us should undertake this wonderful architectural feat to devise a blueprint or a chart of this world's history, we certainly would take into the consideration a complete account of all its parts, Elohim being infinite in wisdom as well as in the power, would certainly not overlook or thoughtlessly a neglect in his great chart of the historical events for the considering of his world before the flood, for a record of a divine survey of this world's history from the creation unto the redemption, would be of the great importance at this present time. In an age of the infidelity, atheism, and hypocrisy, men who professed to be wise in the secular as well as religious matters have lost sight of the source of the true wisdom and knowledge. They saw that when they knew Elohim, they glorified him not as Elohim. Neither were thankful, but became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Romans 1:21-22. Even those who profess to be teachers of the righteousness have forfeited their faith in the biblical reckoning of the creation. For the Yahweh, having knowledge of the present deceptive denial of his holy word, had devised a prophetic blueprint in the symbols of the beast, wings, ribs, horns, heads, crowns, etc., by which he points out in this prophetic panorama the facts with a force that should humiliate men and show them of their utter ignorance and lack of their wisdom. According unto the biblical reckoning, the flood came more than 1600 years after the creation. For the Yahweh originated the human race through the Adam and Eve, therefore one people, one race, one language, and nation from creation unto the flood. For the rulership given unto Adam, we call the first universal Adamic empire. Babylon was the second, Medo-Persia is the third, Greece is the fourth, Rome the fifth. The broken state of the Rome is symbolized by the feet and toes of the great image of Daniel 2, which is the present unstable civilization, is the sixth, and from the close of the millennium after the resurrection of the wicked unto their second death is the seventh and last. Thus, the biblical number seven, as always, signifies completeness. Therefore, such universal empires revealing a complete history of the world denote the end of sin and its dominion. If we mortals were to devise such a chart by the symbols of the beast, it is certain we would have sufficient intelligence to number every beast in his regular order. We may not suppose that the Elohim is less thoughtful in his marvelous perfection. Therefore, he has numbered every beast. We must first consider those which represent the Old Testament time. By the great metallic image, namely the gold, Babylon, the silver, Medo-Persia, the brass, Grecia, gold is the chief of the metals, which would stand as number one. Silver is second to gold, therefore number two. Brass is third to gold, meaning number three. The lion, the bear, and the leopard are numbered in a like manner. The lion is the king or chief of the beast, therefore number one, or corresponding with the gold. The bear is second to the lion, therefore number two, corresponding with the silver. The leopard is third to the lion, hence number three, corresponding with the brass. These are the first set of the numbers, but there is yet another set of which we must speak. These would bring us back to our subject of what is the meaning of the wings on the lion, as well as on the leopard, and the ribs in the mouth of the bear. Elohim certainly would not have mapped out the world's history from the flood unto the end, and failed to take into account all its parts. There must be something in this chart of the historical events to indicate that he had a universal empire before the flood, as previously explained. That empire, being the first, naturally stands as number one. Babylon, number two, Medo-Persia, number three, and Grecia, number four. If this claim is correct, we must find this set of the numbers on the lion, bear and leopard. The wings on the lion denote empire, number two. The lion, by the nature, is first from the flood, but naturally, by two wings, a second from the creation. The ribs in the mouth of the bear signify empire, number three. The bear, by nature, is second from the flood, but unnaturally, by three ribs, he is third from the creation. Ribs are used for wings go in pairs. The four wings on the leopard denote that Grecia is the fourth universal empire. The leopard by the nature is third from the flood, but unnaturally by the wings fourth from the creation. History flies, therefore wings make a perfect symbol. Arise, devour much flesh. Arise, devour much flesh, said the ribs to the bear, Daniel 7:5. For the Medo-Persia opened the war for the imperial wars, therefore. Arise, devour much flesh. Thus empire after empire plunged into the bloody wars. For the ribs in the mouth of the bear cannot mean nations, as some have taught. For nations are symbolized by the horns and not by the ribs. Neither can they denote certain provinces that Medo-Persia could not have conquered, for he has them in his mouth, and it would be inconsistent to suppose that the Persians would have oppressed certain states more than others. Had that been the case, the bear would have stamped upon them as did the nondescript beast, Daniel 7:7. For the symbol is contrary unto such supposition, and there is neither proof the lesson that could be derived by any such theory. Coming back to the lion, symbol of the Babylon, Daniel said, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld how the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man. And a man's heart was given unto it, Daniel 7:4. His wings were plucked. The symbol denotes the same as the plucking of the three horns from the nondescript beast, Daniel 7:8. If the plucking up of the horns denotes their kingdom is taken from them, then plucking the wings signifies that the Babylon as empire number two was to pass away, fulfilling Daniel's interpretation of the handwriting on the wall. This is the interpretation of the thing, meaning, Elohim hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it, Daniel 5:26. Therefore Babylon fell into the hands of the Medo-Persian kings, thus his wings were plucked, and the Medo-Persian empire number three succeeded the lion number two, man's heart given unto it. After the wings of the lion were plucked, says Daniel, he was made to stand upon his feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. Whatever is meant by the position of the beast and the exchange of the heart, its application is after Babylon had fallen under the Medo-Persian rule, for he stood as a man after the wings were plucked. If we are to acquire the understanding of the symbol, we must first consider the function of the heart, for the symbol itself must be perfect, otherwise the truth cannot be determined. The function of the heart is to preserve the life energy in the body. Let the heart stop and all is lost. This most vital organ is a governor of the body. As an empire is composed of the numerous individuals and their necessities, just so is a living body composed of a multitude of live cells and all their essentials. As the duty of a king is to preserve the life energy in his kingdom, also punish or uproot the evil and to supervise the good, just so does the heart, by the contraction and expansion it controls and imparts the flowing living energy in the form of the pure blood. For the evidence gathered thus far proves that the heart is a fitting symbol of a king. But we must specify the difference between the human and the beastly heart. Daniel 4:16. Speaking of the penalty that was to fall upon the king, he said, before he was driven from his throne into the field with the beast, says, let his heart be changed from a man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. After the king's heart was changed, he lost his reason, and by nature became equal to an ox. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon the Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from him, and did eat grass as an oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of the heaven, until his hairs were grown like the eagle's feathers, and his nails like the bird's claws, Daniel 4:33. For the human intellect does not consist in the external image of the mankind, but it rather exists in the human heart. This thought is very emphatically entertained by the scriptures. For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. Therefore the symbol, man's heart, may denote intelligence. However, the symbol cannot infer human vision, but rather a proper understanding of the Elohim, for the Bible says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no Elohim. Isaiah 53:1. Obtaining a clear vision of the infinite power of the Eternal One is what Elohim calls true education. The sum of the symbol is Babylon was forced to acknowledge the existence of the Most High by removing the king's beast heart and setting up another man's heart. Having made clear what the symbol seems to indicate, we must take a brief survey of the ancient monarchy to see if this interpretation can be fully supported by the symbolical heart. As the everlasting example set forth by the flood for the future generations had failed to teach the Chaldean rulers Elohim's power and existence, the creator of the mankind in his mercy, patience, and long-suffering, not willing that any should perish, made a supreme effort to save that nation. Yahweh is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering unto usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come unto repentance, as 2 Peter 3:9. It says, when the dream of the great image was given unto Nebuchadnezzar, his memory of the object was blotted out, but the impression left in his mind was greatly increased. After the urgent demand from the wise men had failed to reveal the king's dream, Daniel by the divine revelation unmasked the mystery phenomena by the interpreting of the dream, for this wonderful miracle should have converted the king and all the wise men of Babylon, and to the Hebrew worshiper by the power of the Daniel's Elohim, they had escaped the death penalty, but there was no change for the better. Though the king honored Elohim with his lips, his heart drew away from him, for the king destroyed not the idols in the land, but in his blindness proceeded to set up a superior one. For shortly after the interpretation of the dream, he demanded of all his subjects the worship of the golden image, which he had set up in the plains of the Dura. Read the third chapter of Daniel. For the refusal of the three Hebrews to bow down unto the idols, and the miracle by which they were saved from the fire furnace, had deeply affected the minds of the rulers, but it too failed to change the king's heart. Again he honored the Elohim of the gods with his lips, but not by his deeds. For the king's unrighteous deeds made it necessary for a supernatural penalty. Hence a tremendous effort to bring him unto a realization of his dependence upon the Creator was necessary. For the dream given him in the Daniel's 4 of the great tree, a symbol of himself and its interpretation by the Daniel, had convinced the hard-hearted monarch of his truth and the judgment that was to fall upon him except to repent. Daniel said, Wherefore, O king, let thy counsel be accepted unto thee, and break off thy sins by the righteousness. And thine iniquities by the showing mercy unto the poor. If it be a lengthening of thy tranquility, at the end of the 12 months, he walked into the palace of the kingdom of the Babylon. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon the Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men, and did eat grass as the oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven. Still, his hairs were grown like the eagle's feathers, and his nails like the bird's claws. Daniel 4:27, 29, and 33. It says, at the end of the painful experience, the king said, Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of Heaven, all whose works are true, and his ways, judgments, and those that walk in the pride he is able to abase. Daniel 4:27. Though he acknowledged the power of the Eternal One, worshipped him and uttered words of the praise with the most sublime expression, the king failed to surrender his heathen heart and renounce the pagan system of the worship. He failed to embrace the great importance of the imparting of the knowledge of the Yahweh unto his posterity for the tranquility and endurance of his kingdom. For these wonderful experiences were for an object lesson to further change. Shortly after the fulfillment of the dream, the king grandson had ascended the throne. In his heathen custom, he ventured to defy the Elohim of God of the gods and the king of the king. He was able to make oxen out of kings and kings out of oxen and rulers out of slaves. For the promotion cometh neither from the east nor from the west nor the south, but Elohim is a judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another. Psalm 75, 6 and 7. For the sacred vessels that had never before been defiled by any king, as in the Belshazzar's drunken feast, Elohim will forbear until man steps over the boundary line. This Belshazzar did by bringing the sacred vessels before his lords, concubines, and heathen gods. at the appearance of the handwriting on the wall, his guilty conscience troubled him, his loins were loose, and his knees smote against one or the other. For the Belshazzar, like his father, ignored Daniel and summoned the wise men of the Babylon to the other. It says, Belshazzar, like his father, ignored Daniel and summoned the wise men of the Babylon to interpret the writing, though he should have known their inability to reveal that the secret. At last Daniel was called, and at his appearance he said, "This is the interpretation of the thing. Many Elohim hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given unto the Medes and Persians." Daniel 5:26-28. For the priceless experience of his father that were at his excess could have been everlasting a blessing. But by the ignoring the power of the Elohim, the king reversed the benefits from a blessing to a curse and brought a final end to his kingdom. Every resource to make the lion Babylon stand up like a man under the rule of the Chaldean kings had been exhausted and every effort failed. Therefore the thing had come for the Yahweh to apply the last remedy unto the lion kingdom. Cyrus, of whom Elohim had spoken by his prophet many years in advance, was granted to enter the capital city of the Chaldean king. See Isaiah 45:1. Babylon as empire number 2 passed away, and the symbol of the plucked wings met its fulfillment. And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. The lion's heart is a symbol of the heathen king Belshazzar, who was slain, and thus the beastly heart was removed, man's purposes, but oft times another power over which he has no control disposes. Daniel was made first president over the 120 princes because an excellent spirit was found in him. Both Cyrus and Darius were converted into the worship of the true Elohim. Therefore, the everlasting arm, which intervenes in the affairs of the mankind, set up a king of his own choice. In this manner, the symbols met their fulfillment, and the lion was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given under it. For the heart is a fitting emblem of a ruler of a nation. For the contrast between Elohim and an unrighteous king is as vastly different as between the human and the beastly heart. The heart is the life-giving energy to the human body, just as a king is the head of a nation. After the freedom had been granted unto the Jews, Cyrus in his proclamation said, "Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Yahweh Elohim of the heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him an house at the Jerusalem, which is in the Judea. Who is therefore there among you of all the people? For his Elohim be with him, and let him go up unto Jerusalem, which is in the Judah, and build the house of the Yahweh Elohim of the Israel, for he is the Yahweh, which is in Jerusalem." Ezra 1:2-3. This righteous influence of the kings of the Medo-Persia did not wear out until years later. The decree made by the Cyrus was written in a roll and placed at Akhmeta in the palace that is in the province of the Medes. Years later, the roll being found by the Darius, the edict was immediately carried out. Cyrus had decreed that all should make a free will offering and the king himself contributed without the limit. He said, "Moreover, I make a decree what ye shall do unto the elders of these Jews for the building of this house of Elohim, that of the king's goods, even of the tribute beyond the river, wherewith expenses to be given unto these men, that they be not hindered." Ezra 6:8, he further decreed that all the needs for the maintaining the sacrificial services be given them day by day without the fail. Then he added, that they may offer sacrifices of the sweet savors unto the Elohim of the heaven, and pray for the life of the king and of his sons. Ezra 6:10. Nebuchadnezzar professed conversion after his wonderful experience with the Elohim of the heaven, and declared, "And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according unto his will in the army of the heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, What doest thou? At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me." And now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the king of the heaven, all whose works are in the truth, and his way a judgment, and those that walk in the pride he is able to abuse, or to abase, that is, Daniel 8:35-37. Though the sublime word spoken by the Chaldean king seems to reveal a change of the heart, his works shows failure in what his lips proclaim. What a contrast between the Babylonian monarch and the Medo-Persian kings. Nebuchadnezzar declined to set Elohim's people free. He refused to restore the sacred vessel unto the king of the heaven. He made no decree for the rebuilding of the house of Elohim. He gave no gift of any kind unto the king of kings, for he imparted not the knowledge of the Yahweh unto his people. For he left his children and his household for the worshiping of the heathen gods of the wood and stone. He made no effort to give Elohim the glory, save with his lips. Though we have these living examples before us, yet how often we admit by our lips that which is right and true, and make no move to reach for the stretched out arm of the divine love. Multitudes are aping the standard set by the ancient monarch. For this people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Matthew 15:8. Though Nebuchadnezzar failed in these sacred things, Elohim in his great mercy saved the king. Elohim bore long with the Babylonian king, but the once proud monarch had become an humble child of the Elohim, for the tyrannical, overbearing ruler as a wise and compassionate king, for he who had defied and blasphemed the Elohim of the heaven, now acknowledged the power of the Most High, and earnestly sought to promote the fear of the Yahweh and the happiness of his study. With the rebuke of him who is King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereigns, Nebuchadnezzar had learned at last the lesson which all rulers need to learn. Prophets and Kings, page 521. The Bear and the Leopard is our next subtitle. It said, for the example made of the Babylonian monarch should have an object lesson unto all successive kings. The righteous influence of the Cyrus might also have been retained, but the kings of the Medo-Persia Like the Chaldeans, we're looking forward unto the worldly glory without the fear of him who can set up the kingdoms and dispose kings. For the process lesson taught by the punishment of the Chaldean kings should have been a blessing unto them, but in their vain imagination they departed from the source of the true wisdom and from the power that is never failing. Thus, that which was intended as a blessing became a condemnation. Therefore, the kings of the Medo-Persia grew worse than the kings of the Grecia, whose idols were their gods and perverse appetite the only rule of their life. Thus again, the time had come for the ribs in the mouth of the bear to speak, arise and devour much flesh. Therefore, the arm of the omnipotent was withdrawn from the Persian king, and Alexander, with the swiftness of an eagle, marched up on his prey. So the Medo-Persia opened the gateway for the bloodiest wars in our world's history. In this manner, the words, arise, devour much flesh, met their fulfillment. Says Daniel, and as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth, and touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes, and he came unto the ram that had the two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran into him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with a colder against him, and he smote the ram and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down onto the ground and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. For the ram which thou sawest having the two horns are the kings of the Medo-Persia, and the rough goat is the king of the Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king, Daniel 8, 5-7, 20 and 21. Therefore Alexander, whose love for the conquest knew no bounds, was the first to successfully lead the West against the East. But no sooner had Alexander conquered the empire than he engaged in a drunken debauch and passed away while yet in his youth. Thus the horn of the he-goat was broken off from between his eyes, and for it came up four notable ones towards the four winds of the heaven. Alexander, not having a successor to inherit the throne, the kingdom was divided between his four generals, namely Cassander, Lamachus, Ptolemy, and Seleucus. Thus time and providence brought about the four-headed leopard beast, the ram and the he-goat. For the entire conflict between the nations is symbolized by the ram and the goat, with the various horns coming up and breaking off. Why a ram and a goat? Why not some other species of the animal? For the Yahshua gives the answer. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats, and he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Matthew 25:32-33. By these domestic beasts, inspiration conveys the thought that the inhabitants of the earth are but sheep and goats, true and false religion. We had the sheep and the goats there at Kermit, Texas, at Gilead Center, from 1970 to 2003. We had a true and false religion in that church. Earlis Johnson represented the leadership of the false religion, and Elijah David represented the leadership of the true religion. It also signifies that wars are a strife between good and evil, but why Medo-Persia by a ram and Grecia by a goat? Why not the reverse? For the kings of the Medo-Persian Empire became believers in the true Elohim, as previously explained, thus having principles contrary unto those of Grecia, For that reason, Medo-Persia is represented by a ram and Grecia by a goat. There you have it. Alexander was represented with a false religion, and the kings of the Medo-Persia were representatives of the true religion, yet they were born and came forth as heathen kings that converted to the true Elohim. Okay. Wonderful it is to note how perfect and thoughtful was the great wisdom and care of the Infinite One as exercised to devise these symbols. Only omnipotence can invent such perfect prophetic art for telling historical events. For the kingdom of the brass rules the world. It has been previously explained that the lion, the bear, and the leopard beasts are divinely numbered, the leopard being the fourth empire from the creation, and as the numbers in that fashion stopped with him, naturally the question would arise, why not continue the numerical order with the beast that followed the leopard? There are several reasons for the change that the particular beast, as the Rome was slowly rising from within the Grecian Empire, she finally absorbed the last Grecian division and the Ptolemy dynasty became a province of the Roman state about 27 BC. Thus, the Old Testament closed with the Grecian, and with the Rome, the new began. Therefore, between Grecia and Rome lies the dividing line. It also noted that the beasts representing the Old Testament are harnessed, but the ones in the new are with the horns, all of which signify the close of the typical and the commencement of the antitypical period. For the numerals of the Bible are like rich veins of the mental beneath the surface of the earth. There are thousands walk over these unknown treasures until some unseen power brings them unto the surface. For we know that the Trinity is best expressed by the use of the terms Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Likewise, we express Elohim's attributes in the three terms, namely, omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotent. This feature could be greatly enlarged upon. If the three is the symbol of the triune Elohim, four must designate that which proceeds from him as revealed in the creation. For the cherubims consist of the four living creatures, each having the face of a lion, a calf, a man, and an eagle, respectively. There are four regions of the earth, east, north, south, and west, which is expressive of the completeness of the direction. Likewise, winter, spring, summer, and autumn covers a complete circle of the seasons. We have already observed that there were four universal empires in the history of the world, from the creation unto the crucifixion. We may also note the fact in connection with this subject that there is a combination of the threefold with the fourfold as clearly seen in the work of the creation, in which the first 4 days were employed in the forming of the sphere, and the remaining three in the creation of the living creatures, and culminating in a Sabbath rest. For the fourth day saw the material substance of the creation finished, and on the fifth and sixth days was the peopling of the earth. In the book of the Revelation, under the head of the seven seals, we observe that the first four seals were clearly separated from the last three by the symbols of the four horses. Thus it appears that the fourfold measure in each case precedes the threefold, just as in the creation order, each division culminating in the seven of the perfection. For this reason, there are four sections in the great image of the Daniel, four beasts, and the Daniel's vision, four wings and four heads on the leopard, with whom the number in that fashion ceased. Thus, it is evident that the Old Testament clothed with the symbolic number 4 for the leopard beast, showing that all the necessary provision for the salvation of the human family was completed under the dispensation of this prominent number 4, as it terminated about the time of the crucifixion. Thus, this number is used in the connection with the incidences for the signifying of the earthwide. Blow ye the trumpet in the Zion, and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Yahshua cometh, for it is nigh at hand. Joel 2:1. This brings the end of our studies. This hour you can contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archives. Here's this message more. We will close now with a song. Zion's Hill by the Elijah Davis.
Well, I'm going to that city. That sits high on God's hill. There are no pretenders, only those who do God's will. Won't you go with me up Zion's Hill? We can walk among the flowers and trill at the beauty that is all around. Zion Hill where love abounds. Those who make it to the city, each will wear a crown of gold. Some with three more stars than others, each star represents a soul. Won't you go with me up Zion Hill? We can walk among the flowers and trill at the beauty that is all around. On Zion Hill where love abounds. When I get to the city, there'll be folks I want to meet. There'll be joy in abundance. They're dancing in the street. Won't you go with me up Zion's Hill? We can walk among the flowers and trill at the beauty that is all around.